From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
As we've reported earlier, the U.S. representative to NATO on Tuesday essentially threatened a preemptive strike against Russian missiles that she claimed violate the INF Treaty. For more on that and on relations between the U.S. and Russia generally, we spoke with Mark Sloboda, senior lecturer at Moscow State University and former U.S. Navy guy. We spoke with him from Moscow via Skype Friday. So, Mark, let's start with Kay Bailey Hutchison, the former governor and senator from Texas, Republican, who is the one that made the threat.
Her threat to preemptively attack Russia.
We're going to take out those missiles.
Yeah, this was during a NATO ministers of defense, defense ministry summit in Europe, in Brussels. And discussion was on a alleged Russian weapon system, a missile by goes by the designation NM729. And this is supposedly a land-based cruise missile, launched from land, a guided land cruise missile that is a variation on Russia's sea-based caliber cruise missile, which has seen recent operation in Syria good evidence that it has been a highly successful system. The U.S. is accusing that there is a land-based variation of this missile that Russia has developed and has actually deployed in at least two locations, if for testing purposes. That the missile, if land-based, violates the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty between Russia and the U.S. And this would put it at somewhere, a range somewhere between 620 and 3,420 miles range. Now, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty was a treaty agreed to in 1987 by then Gorbachev and Reagan. And the basic idea of the threat was to remove the threat of these, you know, shorter range missiles. We're not talking intercontinental ballistic missiles. We're talking shorter range missiles capable of launching nuclear weapons that would basically obliterate Europe and the Russia west of the Urals. These could be fired quickly. There was less possibility for reaction time. And they were viewed as at the time as relatively dangerous by both sides, and that getting rid of them would make Europe safer. So the treaty has largely been upheld until about the last decade. And there are some indications, as Russia has pointed out, Russia has accused the U.S. of multiple violations of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty.
Right.
And they point towards several different ways. The first and most serious probably has to do with the U.S. anti-ballistic missile defense shield, in Europe, particularly in Poland and Romania, elements in Poland and Romania. And this ballistic missile defense shield that the U.S. has put up in Europe uses the Aegis Ashore system with an MK-41 launcher. Now, these launchers are used at sea as well as defense to launch offensive cruise missiles. And it seems the Russian accusation is, and it seems every credible expert has on both sides says that it is at least possible that it would be a matter of minutes up to a few hours to reconfigure these to launch ground-based cruise missiles, which would fall into that intermediate range category.
Right.
So that not only is the missile defense there, for which the U.S. pulled out of the anti-ballistic missile defense treaty unilaterally,
right,
in 2001, but that that was then George W. Bush, but that then these supposed missile defense launchers could actually launch offensive intermediate range weapons, and that they're basically already deployed on Russia's borders. Right. Some of the other accusations that Russia says is the U.S. use of armed drones, the fact that these drones don't have pilots,
right,
and are capable of carrying nuclear missiles if stationed in Europe, that these are also violations of the treaty. They point towards what the U.S. calls test missiles, that it particularly we're looking at the Hera missile and a couple other possibilities that the U.S. uses to test their anti-ballistic missile defense shield. They are essentially intermediate range missiles that are fired and then supposedly intercepted by the anti-ballistic missile defense capabilities.
Right.
But using these test missiles, Russia says the U.S. actually really has a ready supply of intermediate range missiles that are capable of being deployed at a moment's notice. And the treaty, it does not ban the research and development.
Right.
It does ban the manufacture, possession, and it includes the launchers as well as the missiles themselves. Those are the terms of the treaty. And the U.S. is accusing Russia of being in violation. The U.S. back is accusing Russia of being in violation with this new missile. And they say that they have intelligence that it's been deployed to two places in Russia, including one in the south near Volgograd and one further to the east. Now, Russia's position on the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty is that once the U.S. unilaterally pulled out of the Anti-Ballistic Missile Defense Treaty and didn't uphold their international obligations, that the treaty is really no longer in Russia's strategic interests. One, because of the nature of missile defense erected in Europe, which threatens Russia's nuclear deterrent, the potential offensive capability, again, of these missile defense launchers, and the fact that multiple Asian countries now have intermediate range missiles within striking distance, of course, of Russia, of much of Russia, that are not a party to this treaty. Putin has basically said that, you know, we're continuing to observe this, but we basically reserve the right at some point to unilaterally pull out of this, just like you unilaterally pulled out of the Anti-Ballistic Missile Defense Treaty, which Russia kind of regards as the most important original sin since, you know, other than perhaps the expansion of NATO itself.
Yeah, I mean, there's a strategic context to all of this just based on the geography alone. So, but we can get to that. Go ahead.
So, my reading of this is that both countries are probably in violation of the treaty. Neither one is yet willing to pull out of it, because while both countries are probably violating it, they're violating it, shall we say, still largely respecting it. They are violating it in some small ways.
Right, discreetly.
But discreetly. But if both sides pulled out, you know, or if the treaty, you know, what if somebody pulled out and the treaty was annulled, then that might spark a new intermediate range weapon arms race. And there's every indication of exactly that, because the U.S. this year, within its National Defense Authorization Act, basically the military budget, has allocated, I believe, some $58 million towards developing exactly a land-launched guided cruise missile that would specifically fall within the ranges of the treaty. And this is for research and development of overtly of such a system that if they say that if Russia, they determine that Russia continues to be in violation, they will then just go ahead and build these things, and they will already be ready to be built, which probably means they already are being built.
Right.
But, you know, that's the way. So, but this rhetoric that we heard coming out of Kelly of Hutchinson is really quite amazing. She specifically used the phrase, we have to take out.
Yeah, she was pressed on it twice by a reporter also. Right.
She was a reporter, you know, taken aback because he realized what she was saying, you know, asked her again. And, you know, what type of countermeasures are you talking? And her said the countermeasures would be to take out those missiles. And those of us, probably most of us out there who are native English speakers, to take out something has a very specific connotation, especially when used within a military context. She immediately after this summit walked this back, saying that she didn't mean to suggest that the U.S. was considering a preemptive attack on Russia, which is exactly not only how Russia interpreted it, but how U.S. reporters and security people interpreted it. And I'm thinking specifically the first time I saw even mention of it, I wasn't watching, who watches these things as they're happening unless something important is said. Robbie Gramer, who is a security and national defense reporter for Foreign Policy, he tweeted right out that she was making a preemptive attack threat.
Right.
And yeah. So, it wasn't just, Russia interpreted this wrong. No, it's pretty obvious from her conversation that what she meant was to take out Russia's, weapons site. And I hate to tell you, but you don't take out Russia's missiles without starting World War III.
Yeah, for sure.
Because Russia is, probably the only other country on the planet with the nuclear capability to also destroy the United States. The fact that we're living in this post-Cold War era with no rules, and it's increasingly becoming the fact that not only are the Cold War rules, many of them are outdated when dealing with cyber warfare and space and some other things, but what Cold War era treaties that kept the peace, as it were, at least between the two, the two great powers involved, are all rapidly fading. The New START treaty it expires in 2021, and the Trump administration has indicated that the U.S. doesn't want to continue it. NATO Russia Founding Act it exists in paper only now. It's obviously being violated, as is the conventional Armed Forces in Europe treaty. The INF treaty, we can talk later if we get to it, about the Biological Weapons Convention, which may be being violated right now. U.S. accuses Russia of violating the Chemical Weapons Convention.
Right.
All of these Cold War treaties that provided a degree at least of rules of if we follow the rules and respect each other, to this amount, then we provide a degree of reliability and safety between two enemies that could destroy each other and the whole world with them. Well, all of these are going out the window. They're going out, they're eroding, they're fading, they're being pulled out of the anti-ballistic missile treaties, another one. And with Trump again unilaterally pulling out of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, that was just agreed to by all of the major world powers and solidified with a UN Security Council resolution. It shows once again that the exceptional nation, you know, doesn't believe that it's bound by international law. And
right.
Trump administration Bolton's recent threats to not only, you know, not adhere to the International Criminal Court, but to actually go after the International Criminal Court, to attempt to defund it, and to make personal attacks on the finances and right. travel ability of any judges or prosecutors involved who would dare to bring pending cases against the United States and Israel.
Yeah, Bolton sounds like Dutch Schultz or something. He's a maniac.
It's crazy. Can't you dare to judge us? Never mind that, you know, we're all more than happy to use the International Criminal Court on the countries that we, the leaders of the country we defeat. We're threatening to go after the judges, the prosecutors involved. And they also even said any state organization or company facilitates such.
That's right. Sanctions
for everybody.
That's right. Kneecaps.
They're talking suing them in court. And, yeah. You know, everything. And this is Bolton has previously when during the first Trump the first the administration he was in, the George W. Bush administration, when the U.S. was pushing to war on Iraq on the pretext of weapons of mass destruction, Trump was threatening. UN and UN officiated officials, OPCW, that if you don't resign, then we will go after you, and making comments, that I believe have been recorded. It's certainly been reported by the officials involved that he said, we know where your kids live. You're in New York.
You said Trump? Or are you talking about Bush?
No, we're talking about Bolton.
Oh, Bolton. Bolton.
He's the connect. I mean, obviously, right. he's brought back into power. He was making these accusations, basically threatening like a mafia.
Like I said, he's like Dutch Schultz. He's not just like a mafia. He's like crazy mafia. He's insane.
I have to admit, I have no idea who Dutch Schultz is.
Oh, yeah, that's why. Yeah, he was at the council, of mobsters or whatever. He was like the wild buncher. The rest of them were... And we're businessmen, So, listen, I want to go to this to the context where people understand some things, because some treaties matter more to one side than the other, and these are based on geography and also on the balance of the other forces. For Russia, first of all, the intermediate range nuclear forces treaty, the INF treaty. Came into being in response to the cruise missiles that had been deployed, particularly in Germany. It started in the late 70s, deployed actually, I think, in 1983, finally, in Germany. I remember standing in Moscow in 1990 with my friend Paul, and he was pointing to the main government buildings, the sisters' buildings, and describing, essentially, he said, well, in the event of a nuclear attack, the hotshots that are on the top floors of these buildings have an 18-minute elevator ride from the top to the bottom to a hardened, safe facility. The problem is it's 12 minutes from launch to detonation here, from launch in Germany. So, the government was operating under a state of siege from deployment. So the cruise missiles, these, medium-range missiles mattered an awful lot. Medium-range missiles launched from anywhere in Russia maybe can hit Sarah Palin's house. Maybe can hit Seattle, perhaps, but that's about it. Otherwise, they need intercontinental ballistic missiles to do that.
They were a threat to Europe, but not to most of the United States.
And then the other has to do with the anti-ballistic missile system. Now, Russia's nuclear deterrent is based in Russia. And so surrounding Russia with enemy nations, which is what's been happening since 1993, basically, means deploying those weapons so that anything shot from Russia can be shot down. In other words, negating Russia's nuclear deterrence, and sure. Russia doesn't have a geographical opportunity to do the same thing unless it does some atmospheric kinetic weapon or something.
Let's look at where that's being done in South Korea,
right.
In Poland,
right.
In Romania. There's
right.
elements in the United Kingdom.
Right.
There's elements in Alaska, yeah. And there's a variety of seaborne right. elements that can be deployed anywhere as needed. Now, obviously, that's a ring around Russia. I mean,
right.
that's
yeah, look at a map. I mean, for sure. Yeah. And then you have, in addition to that, by the way, if we're going to talk about treaty obligations, the Non-Proliferation Treaty under Article 6 required not just, Iran and North Korea can't, nuke nations can't get nuclear weapons, we don't want proliferation. It also had an affirmative obligation on the parties to A, stop growing the nuclear arsenals, B, yeah. reduce them to zero, and C, begin and accomplish total disarmament.
Yeah, and it has to be said that none of the nuclear armed major powers have begun that anyway. Everyone is in violation of that around the boards. And we created a two-tier international system with the top tier countries that have nuclear weapons, and the West was more than happy, speaking of non-proliferation, to add Israel to their side with nuclear weapons. And no one, of course, has ever taken any actions against Israelis' nuclear arsenal.
No inspection, not a party to any regime, nothing. They're wild, wild out there.
I want to stress why the anti-ballistic missile treaty pullout was so serious for Russia, in the post-Cold War era, because Russia's conventional forces, were always behind the U.S., but at on a global scale, but at least in Europe, Russia had a if for combat in Europe, Russia had a numerical superiority, particularly with right. tanks and so on, at least in the short term, with right. the idea that then they could prevent the U.S. from getting resupply of forces to Europe. That's the Tom Clancy Red Storm Rising scenarios, everything like that. But in the post-Cold War era, Russia's not only geography and geopolitical horizons, but its military forces are reduced. There's no question that Russia has made leaps and bounds to modernizing its military in the last 10-12 years. Most international ranking in the world still puts Russia as number two military power in the world after the United States. That said, they simply lack power projection. Recent developments in Georgia and Ukraine and elsewhere have raised the specter that Russia, particularly in Ukraine, a lot of criticism in Russia is we can't even defend the countries in our near abroad. Russia's conventional capability is much less, despite all these advances, overall, than the United States,
right.
which means Russia relies more for its security, particularly against an aggressive West that is right. knocking off countries around the world whenever it gets right. an opportunity and a feeling to do so, that it needs its nuclear deterrent to provide for its defense right. against what it sees as an aggressive U.S. and NATO far more than U.S. actually relies on its nuclear weapons for a deterrent, being the dominant conventional power on the planet anyway.
This is the main context, by the way, is this: the Russia is not and has no interest in raising a threat to invade the United States or to destroy the United States or Europe. And so meanwhile, the United States has a massive military budget at the same time that it has been forward directing aggression and hostility towards Russia. So to the extent that it is a huge impact on the American and West European and Japanese and Korean economies. And if Russia elects not to do that, In other words, let's not be a wartime economy. Then the only way they can defend themselves against this monster at the moment is with nuclear weapons. It's cheaper.
Yeah. And let's be clear, you know, Russia did increase its military spending. You know, it's still a less than a tenth of what U.S. military spending is. Did increase the military spending over the last, five years.
Right.
And that the goal of that was simply modernization, to catch up from the lag that occurred in the 90s when the U.S. was continuing to advance and Russia wasn't. But now that that modernization has been viewed to be largely achieved, the U.S., the Russian military defense budget is now going down. It went down last year, and it will go down further this year.
Right.
And at the same time, you know, Trump is having a huge military defense budget increase and pushing the country, the rest of the European countries of NATO, to increase their military spending as well.
Right.
So, you know, Russia doesn't want Poland. Russia doesn't want the Baltics, right?
Right.
You couldn't pay Russia to take Poland back. That's Russia's like, whoo, we got rid of that one. EU, that's your problem now.
Yeah, it's almost like a reverse of 1939 at this point, 1938, in that Russia's like, here, Germany, you take it. Germany, like, no, you take it.
The threat of conventional conflict, and which could always spiral into strategic conflict between Russia and the U.S., is always the situation of countries in Russia's periphery, whether we're talking Ukraine, Belarus, Georgia, Kazakhstan. As far afield, Russia's geopolitical horizons don't extend any further than Syria, which is still 24 hours by jeep from Russia's vulnerable southern underbelly, as they call it, you know, where, which Russia really did not need to see Damascus fall and Al-Qaeda or Ahrar al-Sham or Jaish al-Islam start a Islamic caliphate in Syria, which is basically what is happening right now in Idlib under U.S. and Turkish protection. But
and very quickly, tell us what's going on in the Republic of Georgia, former Soviet republic.
There is a joint Georgian-U.S. biomedical facility, a brand new facility supposedly in Georgia, built on a former military base, you know, a place with no former medical research. And it's called, get this, the Richard Lugar Center for Public Health Research in Georgia, right? And we're not talking Georgia, the U.S. state. We're talking Georgia, you know,
the Republic of Georgia,
next to Russia. Yeah. But Russia has accused, is making accusations that they, the U.S. may be conducting bio warfare research there to get out of more stringent oversight that it might prevent it from being done within the United States. And they're pointing to a number of people who have died. This is a center just a few kilometers outside of the Georgian capital, Tbilisi. 73 people have died, at least 73, in recent days there, including 24 in one day. And then 27 in one day, sorry. And then you know, another 40-some died. And the official story is that they died during treatment for Sovaldi, which is a treatment, potential treatment for hepatitis C, and that they were conducting human trials. Interestingly, trials being conducted in Russia have resulted in no deaths attributed.
That's interesting. And here's something that's also ironic. The Nunn-Lugar Act, this is the actual Senator Richard Lugar from Indiana's work in the Senate. He was one of the people that act was done to dismantle biological weapons, among other things, around the world. So there's a deep irony there.
Anyway, the accusations that the U.S. is conducting research there were actually from a Georgian former security minister who has released hundreds of thousands of pages of documents, secret documents online that have all kind of links to the U.S. conducting research with hemorrhagic fever there. Weaponizing mosquitoes to carry toxins, hollow point bullets that could contain chemical or biological agents.
Yep.
And there's this all this talk about the U.S. developing genetic warfare, with the Air Force having a database specifically of ethnic Russian genetic material.
Yep, I know. All right, we're going to maybe have to pick it up there next week. Mark, thank you very much.
Thanks, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.